Online, pirates expropriate what does not belong to them and often feel righteous in so doing, infuriating the man. The coiners and speakers of slang do approximately the same thing, to approximately the same effect. Here's what lexicographer Jonathan Green has to say on that subject. Quote, slang is the language that says no. Born in the street, it resists the niceties of the respectable. It is impertinent, mocking, unconvinced by rules, regulations, and ideologies. It remains something apart. And for many, that is where it should stay. That's from Green's introduction to the Dictionary of Slang, a three-volume, $450, more than 6,000-page collection of 110,000 English-language slang terms defined and meticulously cited in almost 10.6 million text words that survey more than 500 years of slang. In other words, Green has taken the ultimate in fleeting language and pinned it down in the single most authoritative slang collection ever assembled. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So first, let's define our terms. For your purposes, what is slang?
It's unsurprisingly about crime. It's about drink, and obviously since the 20th century, about drugs. It's about sex. It's about bigging yourself up. It's about putting other people down. It's about men who are wonderful. It's about women who are sex objects. It's about mad people, fat people. It's about racism. It's about nationalism. Not all slang is international. The book is international. It takes in the States, the UK, takes in Australia, it takes in New Zealand, the English-speaking bits of South Africa, the Caribbean, and it takes in Ireland. But what interested me doing it and what's changed for people being in England, there's no possible way that somebody working at the over the last 17 years could possibly exclude America. It would be mad. I mean, we all talk American slang now.
So why do we need slang? I mean, we know it's colorful. We know it's often witty. We know subversive and anti-authoritarian. But language is pretty comprehensive. Why do we need to embellish it with slang?
I think you have to go back to where slang comes from, criminal language. And what criminals were about, and I'm talking the 1500s here, what criminals are always about is secrecy, is not letting the authorities, not letting the public know what they're up to. And their language was the first slang to be collected. I'm sitting in the tavern, and there is a guy over there who's known as the Harmon Beck, which means a magistrate in my language. Now, in the first place, I don't wish him to know that I know who he is, so I call him the Harmon Beck, and I don't wish him to know who I am, so I'm using this strange language to talk about him. And what you get with slang is that there is this desire to have, as it were, private insider languages, and as soon as a word gets, or a phrase gets known, it gets replaced.
There's one category of slang that particularly intrigues me, and it's the hundreds or thousands of ways that young people come to express the notion of good. Just in my lifetime, there have been many, from cool to groovy to keen to fine to sweet to the cat's pajamas.
The interesting thing about those is that they're the positive group. What you've also had is like the negative group, bad, wicked, sick. I mean, they in a way are the perfect exemplars of the subversion, because my parents say good, I say bad. You can go back much further, and there's the word rum. Rum is a word, again, in the 16th century that means really good to the beggars, to the criminals, so rum becomes, in standard English, means bad. He's a rum cove, he's an odd fellow. But rum, as far as Rumville used to be London, it was the best place, it was the great ville, the best city.
There must be some favorite turns of phrase or slang vocabulary that just delight you. Please share with me some of the Hall of Fame.
What excites me is not the individual words. They're all my babies. I love them all. What it's all about is the chase. Let me give you an example. There's a word hoopty, means a rusty old car. So in the printed book, you'll find that hoopty dates back to 1968. Trouble is, hoopty doesn't date back to 1968, because I now know better, because I've still been chasing. And I happened to buy the other day a collection of Black Mask magazine, the great old pulp magazine that was the first place for Dashiell Hammett, for Raymond Chandler, for a bunch of other people back in the 20s and 30s. And there, in a story from 1939, bingo, there is Hoopty. That makes my day. The Holy Grail is pushing it back, finding the earlier date. Some of it, you know, some of it, Dr. Johnson is right, you're a harmless drudge. There's no doubt about it. It's very hard, perhaps, to make this side of lexicography as exciting to others as it is to me, but it is to me.
You've just invoked Dr. Johnson, perhaps history's most famous lexicographer. My guess is he's also an entry in another dictionary of slang, the Urban Dictionary, because his name sort of sounds filthy, and that's what the Urban Dictionary is. It is a vast, vast collection of probably real slang and a lot of, you know, fancy neologisms for things that are dirty or naughty or actually quite repulsive. And I wonder what your thoughts are about the Urban Dictionary.
The Urban Dictionary is the antithesis of what I do. I don't want to be, no, the hell with it, I will be snotty. The Urban Dictionary is amateur hour. They're students at 4 a.m, out of their heads, and having fun and sending this stuff in. So for me, the Urban Dictionary is playtime, but it's got nothing to do with lexicography. And I think an awful lot of it hasn't got that much to do with slang.
I want to get to the larger subject of setting about to collect and document 500 years of slang. First of all, it's a losing proposition because by the time you submit your manuscript, there are 1,000 or 10,000 more words of slang that you have no access to. It's a moving target, no?
It's totally a moving target, and there is no such thing as a completist dictionary, or not of the sort that I want to write. I have an image which is not my image, but I can't remember to my shame who thought it up. But if you think of the language as a big train that is moving across a vast continent, and as the lexicographer, all you can do is you jump on the train and you start cataloguing everything that's in those trucks, everything that's in those carriages. Then you jump off. Now, the train, of course, keeps moving. It is possible that you can jump on again later, and you can pick up, maybe there's a couple more carriages, you can catalogue them again. But you can never catalogue all of them, because the train will be moving long after you're alive, and it was moving long before you were born. And all one can do is make the catalogue that is accessible. But the idea of completism, the idea of getting everything, no, it's quite impossible. Any lexicographer will tell you that.
Jonathan, it's been groovy. Thank you very much.
It's been real.
Jonathan Green is the author of the 3-volume Dictionary of Slang.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.